It's very special, Mazel Tov, to Chana, and we just, you know, as was said, special, you know, special wishes. We'll actually talk about a little bit about remarriage today. This was not planned, but, you know, one of these serendipitous things.
Well, we have to work it in.
Yeah, providential. A little providential in that regard. So I titled this year, and thanks, Joanne, again for the cookies and sending out the title of this year, seeing with the heart. So we all know that the beginning of Sefer Shmos, the Jewish people find themselves enslaved. You know, one of the challenges of slavery, one of the many challenges of slavery, because, right, there's a physical component to it, is avodas parech. There's a kind of psychological and emotional component to it, what the Torah describes as mikotze ruach, that, you know, you begin to lose any concept of what freedom looks like, of what a more dignified, higher quality of life could even look like, and that's also a part of it. And so if that's what slavery can be in terms of the suffering, so redemption isn't really only a, you know, release from bondage, and now one is free. But redemption requires the capacity to begin to imagine that things could be different. Everybody that deals with impoverished communities or socioeconomically disadvantaged communities or individuals, everybody who works with that community knows, as sort of rule number one, that the first thing before you accomplish anything is to give a child, a person, a sense that things can actually be different. I mean, that sounds trite, but it's actually not. You know, people don't really think that things could ever change, and so there's no effort that would really be worth investing. And that process of showing somebody that things can be different is not a simple one. And that's sort of the explanation for the title this year, which is not seeing with one's eyes, normally the way that we talk about seeing, but seeing with the heart. And when you can see things with your heart, as you could believe a picture that doesn't yet exist, so then that can create a very powerful propulsive force, a kind of momentum to the point where the wish or the aspiration can even become a reality. I just want to begin by developing the concept of seeing with one's heart from a very familiar source, and then we'll be able to play this back into the parasha. You know, part of the Kriyat Shema, the third paragraph, which is taken from the 15th chapter of Sefer Bamidbar, says, "V'lo tatur acharei levavchem v'acharei neichem." So it literally means, "You shall not stray after your hearts and after your eyes." It's a very strange thing, and everybody notices this formulation, that the Torah should have said, "V'lo tatur acharei neichem v'acharei levavchem," right? Because the first thing that happens is that you see something, and it could be licit or illicit, and then you could desire it, like it says by the very first sin of the Eitz Hadad, Vatera ha'isha ki tov ha'etz l'ma'achal, right? She saw, v'chi tava hu la'inayim, and etc. And she, you know, she made the wrong choice. So usually, this is something that Rashi speaks about often, the einayim are really what cause things to go wrong. You see something, and that's why there's so much literature about shmirat einayim, about you know, guarding the things that one looks at, etc. But that's not what the Torah says here. It says lo tatur acharei levavchem ve'acharei neichem. In other words, that what you see with your eyes is actually driven by what's in your heart. You know, two people could look at, you know, the same situation, have a completely different sense of what's going on depending on what it is they're bringing to the table. You know, having eyes is no guarantee of having vision. And that's what David HaMelech was talking about in Sefer Tehillim. It's actually part of our Hallel, when he said, "Einayim lahem velo yiru." People can have eyes and still be completely incapable of seeing. And this is also part of the critique or the rebuke that Shmuel is given by Hashem when he's sent to the house of Yishai to appoint a king, and Shmuel sees that one of the sons is very physically impressive, and he, you know, thinks to himself, this is the one that God will anoint as the next leader of the Jewish people. And God says, you know, you understand nothing. Ki ha'adam yirele inayim v'Hashem yirele levav. I'm not interested in what it is that you see in the superficial sense, God looks straight into a person's heart. And of course, you know, every time David is described, it's about his Lev Ne'eman, his Lev Yashar, etc. So I think that's really the theme of Parshat Shmot. I never actually counted, but I'd be shocked if the Shoresh of Ri'iyah appears anything less than 40 times in the Parsha. It's an amazing phenomenon. Everybody is looking, everybody is seeing. It's only a question of what it is that they're looking at and what it is that they're seeing. You know, famously with the Sneh, Vayar Hashem, God sees, Kisar L'Ot, that Moshe stopped to take a look. And that's sort of like the basis of Moshe's selection, that he's curious enough to look. Ra'o Ra'iti et Ani Ami Asher B'Mitzrayim. I saw. The suffering of the Jewish people in Egypt. It's literally all over. You can't go to Psukim in Parshat Shmot without seeing that church. The question is just like, what do you think that you're really looking at? So to understand this and appreciate it, we have to, as is often the case, go backwards before we could go forwards. So we know that the beginning of Parshat Vayechi, the previous Parsha that we had, the end of the book of Bereishit, is unusual in the Torah, where normally, every single other parsha in the Torah has what we call a ptucha, meaning it starts in a new line. So, Parshat Vayechi is stuma. Okay, in other words, where Vayigash ends off, it says the Jewish people lived in Eretz Goshen. Vayechazuva, they grasp onto it. Vayifru Vayirbu Ma'od, and then next, you know, just one space as if it was the same parsha. Vayechi Yaakov Eretz Yisrael Shvas Reshana. Anybody remember what Rashi says? Very profound insight. Why is Vayechi Stuma? Okay. So Rashi says, so Kevan Sheniftar Yaakov Avinu, once Yaakov died, which obviously happens in Parashat Vayechi, Nistimu Einehen V'liban Shal Yisrael Mitzarat Hashibud. So because of what was coming, the loss of Yaakov Avinu, as well as the impending slavery, so Rashi is an amazing expression. Nistimu einehen viliban shel Yisrael. It wasn't just that their eyes were closed, but their hearts sort of closed in on themselves. Stimat halev. What a fascinating expression. But what's really interesting, okay, what's really interesting is that when Moshe first appears on the scene, the Torah tells us, Vaigdal Moshe vayetzei lechav vayar besivotam, one of the 40 or so Re'iot. We have to get a graduate student here who can actually count the Re'iot so we could publish this in a peer-reviewed journal. But whatever it is, so it says, Vayigdal Moshe vayetzei lechav vayar besivlotam. So Rashi says, what does it mean, vayar besivlotam, that he saw their suffering? So the words echo. It says, Nasan aleihem, that Moshe invested in them Libo, his heart, ve'enav, and his eyes, lios meitzer aleihem. In other words, that he literally sat himself down, so to speak, and he took the time to invest, to think about how different his gilded life it was in the palace versus, you know, the grinding poverty and suffering of these enslaved Hebrews. So that expression of Nasan aleihem libo ve'enav, that what happened was is that he opened not just his eyes but his heart, is a direct reference back to the Rashi that we just talked about, the beginning of Vayechi, is nistimu einehem v'liban shel Yisrael, right? That their eyes, they couldn't see anymore, their hearts were closed, they had lost all sense of hope. So the seeds of redemption, right, of course, begin with Moshe's capacity to, you know, really imagine, to power of imagination, that wait a minute, you know, these aren't just the kind of dehumanized animals that the Egyptians have made them out to be, but there's actual human suffering going on here. So that required not just enayim, but that required a ptichat halev. That's what Rashi is really driving at. Just before that, right, Moshe's only alive because of I had a long discussion with my daughter about this, who has a special role in life. She's a big sister. So he's only alive because of his big sister, right, Miriam. The Torah tells us just before that, that Miriam stood at a distance. She was literally watching over Moshe. And so, you know, the Gemara is like wondering, like, who, you know, she's this little 5-year-old girl, so what's going on here? So the Gemara in Sota beautifully explains that after the decree was given, Kol HaBen HaYilod HaYi'or HaTashlichu, that they're going to kill all of the boys, V'chol HaBat T'chayun, so Amram separated from his wife Yocheved, and he said, you know, how can we bring children into the world under these conditions? I mean, it's a cruel thing. Famously, Miriam started up with her father, and she said, Abba, it's a quote from the Gemara, Kasha gzeirascha mishal paro, so you're worse than Paro. Because first of all, Paro only decreed on the boys, and, you know, your decree is really, by separating from mom, on the girls as well. And, you know, Paro, he's a wicked person, so, you know, who knows, you know, whether God will really enable his vision to come to fruition. But you, Dad, you're a righteous person. Amram is one of the people, the Gemara says, that never even sinned. So, you know, God is more likely to go along with your plans. And he says, fine. And she says, finally, even if Paro gets what he wants, these lives that are brought into the world, will have a chelik in Olam Haba. But people who are never born, so they can never have a portion of Olam Haba. So, of course, you know, Miriam carries the day, and there's a remarriage. A big celebration. Vayelach ish mi beis Levi, vayikachas bas Levi, and then the Gemara says that when Moshe was basically taken from the house because the secret police were so on top of everything that was going on in the Jewish community, that the Torah says v'lo yachlaud hatzvino, Yocheved couldn't hide Moshe anymore. So it says that Amram literally smacked Miriam and said, "Look what happened. This is what I was afraid of the whole time," and her response was, it's not over yet. She wasn't looking at the situation like he was looking at it. So, not just from a physical distance, but God seemed very distant at the time, but she was willing to imagine that something could change. And she was primed for it, so that when, you know, Bat Paro, God works in mysterious ways, right, the very daughter of Paro ends up undermining, you know, his whole decree. So when she comes down, the chotz al hayor, and she opens up the bassinet, vatiftach vatirehu, another one of the 40, es hayaled vinei nar bochah. So Miriam runs and she springs into action. But again, it was only a product of the fact that, you know, she was able to look at the situation, not, you know, in terms of what was going on, but in terms of what could possibly be. She is really the paradigmatic character of somebody who was able to see with her heart. I just wanted to, you know, conclude this thread by noting that this idea, which, you know, Rashi should really be credited with, is of what I call Ri'at Halev, of seeing with one's heart, is in fact the way, apparently, that God relates to the Jewish people. The Torah says, again, this is past week's Parsha, that as the Jewish people were suffering, Vayar Elohim et Bnei Yisrael, Vayeda Elohim. That God saw the Jewish people and he knew. So Rashi says, again, Natan alehem lev velo ha'elim inav, that God, so to speak, allowed his heart to feel the suffering of the Jewish people and he did not turn away. Velo ha'elim inav. So again, lev ve'inayim, the third Rashi. First with Yaakov, then with Moshe. And this is how God relates to us, that it would be easier to look away, v'lo ha'alim enav, rather natan alehem lev, that God invested in us and God saw that we were suffering. And so, you know, all of this, I think, can be contrasted with, try not to judge it, I don't think we should ever judge, you know, a mother who's in this situation, but this idea of specifically not looking away, right? Moshe was not willing to look away, Miriam was not willing to look away, Hashem was not willing to look away, Vayar Elohim b'nei Yisrael, Vayed Elohim. This should all, of course, take us back to a critical moment in Sefer Bereishit, where you have a child that appears to be lost, just as Moshe appeared to be lost, and it's a very painful situation for everybody involved. But instead of standing fast and waiting, you know, for divine salvation, the person involved can't handle it anymore, and explicitly says, I cannot watch this happen. Who am I referring to, of course? To Hagar. Okay, what does the Torah say? That they get lost in the desert, and the, you know, so she throws the child down. Whereas this is the opposite of Miriam. V'atitatzav achotam mirachok l'diyat mayas alo. So it says that Hagar said, right, al ereh b'mot hayaled. V'ateshev mineged. So she moves far away. V'atisad kolah v'atevk. And what does God say to her? When the malach appears to Hagar, says, you have to open up your eyes. And indeed, that's what the Torah says, that when she opened her eyes, she saw that there was a well right there. But when you close your eyes, you look away, then there's no possibility for salvation. And so Hagar is meant to be contrasted with this, you know, incredible bravery, first of Miriam, then of Moshe, then Hashem, v'lo ha'alimu et enehem. None of them looked away. Even though the vision in front of one can be very painful, if one can see with the heart and see that things can change, see that things can improve and get better, so then you don't have to avoid what's going on right now. You can confront it directly and hopefully aspire to something you know, much greater and much more significant. So I think the significance of all of this is clear. The Torah is telling us is that when we face these, you know, very bleak situations, like these seemingly hopeless situations, so the tendency is to sort of look at what there is and allow that to be the final word on the situation. You know, it looks disastrous, and so it must be that, you know, catastrophe is only a matter of time. But the very seeds of, you know, of our redemption, again, we don't, you know, really get redeemed until Parshat B'Shalach, but the seeds of redemption are already planted here, you know, at the very, very beginning. Just as Shibud Mitzrayim was settling in, there are a few select individuals, you know, who were able not just to open their eyes, but more importantly, liftoach et halev. And what they saw with their hearts, and then, you know, through their actions, they were able to engender a reality that more closely resembled what they had envisioned with their hearts than what initially was visible to the eyes. And so those, you know, those figures that could, you know, think about things a little bit differently. It was Yaakov Avinu who told the Jewish people, Pakod yivkod elokim etchem, God will get you out of here one day. It was a Moshe, Vayar besivotam natan alehem einav v'libo, that he invested not only his eyes but his heart. It was a Miriam who could see that there was a possibility for a future. And of course, above all, it's God. Vayar Elokim et bnei Yisrael, Vayeda Elokim, Natan Alehem Libo, Velo Ha'elim et Einav. He didn't avert his eyes. And that's really the difference between our figures, these heroic figures, and Hagar. You know, when the situation was bleak, you know, Vateshev Mineged, Al Erev, Emotayalad, she can't possibly, you know, look at what it is that's going on. So without judging it too harshly, we have to contrast that with the proper approach to difficult situations, which is, you know, encapsulated by a beautiful statement of Chazal, Afilu Cherev Chada Munachad Al Tzavero Shel Adam, even if a person feels a sword against his or her neck, Al Yimanatz Momin HaRachamim, that we shouldn't give up. It's not over until it's over. And where there's, you know, life, there's hope. And that's the story of Miriam, a little girl who taught us a lot about resilience. The story of Moshe being willing to imagine that things could look different for these Hebrew slaves. It's a story of, obviously, God, who has continued to be invested in us, Vayar Elokim et bnei Yisrael, Vayed Elokim. But it's equally the story, you know, for all of us in a certain position in life. And as Chana said very eloquently, you don't necessarily imagine that it will change, and all of a sudden, you know, it does, and it can. So whatever the challenges that we're facing are, Shibud Mitzrayim is really meant to be a paradigm for us. And to think about, you know, difficult situations as challenges and obstacles, to be sure, but fatalities, not so much. If that's the perspective, if we're willing to see a little bit more with our hearts, as the Torah said, V'lo tatur achrei levavchem v'achrei einechem, what you see is really a product of what it is that's going on inside of you. An optimistic person can see reality in a truly different way than anybody else. And, you know, we're fortunate in modern times, perhaps the greatest example of that in all of human history, Im Tirtzu, Ein Zo Agada.